When the program was made up, Professor Martin Diamond of Northern Illinois University tentatively accepted an invitation to address you. He did so with the proviso that he might have to withdraw. In the course of events, that is indeed what happened. And as Professor Diamond explained it to me, he preferred to go and speak to the heathen, the unconverted, as he described them, than to address the converted. I think that Professor Diamond has a rather imperfect conception of what the Philadelphia Society is exactly like. It is true we are the converted, but we're converted to a remarkable diversity of views, and he might find, I think, more challenge here than in North Carolina. He has sent us, however, a coeval partner, Professor Martin J. Frisch of Northern Illinois University. He's professor of political science, was formerly professor at William & Mary College. From 63 to 64, he was Fulbright Professor of Political Science at the University of Stockholm. He's co-author of a book published by Charles Scribner and Sons in 1971, American Political Thought. Professor Frisch.
As you realize, I did not have time to write a paper on this topic, and what I had agreed to do was to comment on Professor Zoll's paper, and so that's what I am prepared to do this afternoon. I would have preferred to give a paper of my own, but unfortunately, time didn't allow. Professor Zoll argues that the practice of government in the United States has been affected by severe inhibiting forces. These forces that inhibit the effectiveness of American government are an enhanced spectrum of public expectations regarding the potentialities of government, two, the entertainment of ideology as the postulate from which the activity of government flows, and three, expanding bureaucratic control. I will confine my remarks to the last two points which Professor Zoll makes, those dealing with ideology and bureaucracy. Professor Zoll defines ideology as a body of social convictions resting upon a foundation of unchallengeable premises and espoused and dogmatically held set of first principles from which there can be no legitimate intellectual dissent. What follows from the entertainment of dogmatic social axioms, according to him, is first a narrowing of the legitimacy of dispute regarding fundamental assumptions, and second, a correspondingly severe restriction upon governmental discretion. We can no longer get to the roots of our problems, he says, because we can no longer frame truly radical questions and pose tentatively the alternatives of the policy they imply. No solutions to the state of public welfare in race relations can be affected because governmental policies in these areas must forego the clarity of rational reflection. Professor Zoll believes that our diminishing freedom to talk about social first principles is serious because it cripples the ability of government to provide for reasonable human wants, and he reminds us that the latter was Edmund Burke's supposition regarding the function of government. I believe, however, that Burke would argue to the contrary, namely, that there is nothing more crippling than a free and full discussion of social first principles. The bulk of mankind, on their part, says Burke, are not exceedingly curious concerning any theories whilst they are really happy. And the one sure symptom of an ill-conducted state is the propensity of the people to resort to theories. In speaking of social first principles, Professor Zoll says that he is convinced that the irreducible objective of government is the maintenance of order. He cites approvingly the preamble to the Constitution that this republic was instituted, among other things, to ensure domestic tranquility. While order and tranquility are not in one sense the same thing, he says, it is impossible to think of a civilized society bereft of tranquility. He says, moreover, that if government is to introduce tranquility, it must attend to arrangements in such a fashion as to provoke among the citizenry a tranquil state of mind. I believe that we have a set of social first principles, and that these first principles are most excellently stated for us in such documents as the Declaration of Independence, the preamble to the Constitution, and the Federalist Papers. In speaking of first principles, Madison in Federalist number 37 states that among the difficulties encountered by the convention, a very important one must have lain in combining the requisite stability and energy in government with the inviolate attention due to liberty and to the republican form. Professor Zoll suggests that we need to discuss first principles, for he says that our diminishing freedom to talk about social first principles is a serious thing. I would be most reluctant to encourage a discussion of social first principles on the public level, for as I see it, it would only serve to disturb the public tranquility rather than the other way around. Concerning Professor Zoll's other point, bureaucracy, he says the increasing incapability of the President and Congress to impose their judgments on the bureaucracy constitutes a more serious deadlock of democracy than that described by Professor James McGregor Burns. He describes bureaucracies as self-perpetuating organs, deeply convinced of their own expertise and superiority in contrast to what they conclude are the deficiencies of elected officials. I would like to make a number of observations based on my reading of Professor Herbert Storing's essay, The Problem of Big Government, which was published in A Nation of States. First, bureaucracy is today's manifestation of the original decision for big government. Whether it is to be a force for good or for evil depends, first of all, on a recognition and acceptance of the fact that it is a major force in American political life. Second, while the national bureaucracy is mainly known today for its size, complexity, irresponsibility, and impenetrability, thanks to sociology, It does, to a very considerable extent, exercise a steady pressure on our political leaders to transcend passing desires and prejudices. One of the great defects of democratic government is that it's too close to the people, too easily infected with popular moods and forces, too little equipped to guide the people and to resist them when the common good is so demanded. Third, this doesn't mean that the bureaucracy should be above criticism. It doesn't mean to deny the existence of inefficiency, irresponsibility, and petty tyranny. But wholesale condemnation of the bureaucracy only has the effect of diverting attention from the need to nurture and strengthen its capacity for administrative statesmanship and of weakening what is a prime source of intelligence as well as a major stabilizing and moderating force in American government today. To these comments of Professor Storing, I would like to add my own observations. Where the national bureaucracy has had its greatest power in doing what it damn pleases is in what the people already believe should be done. But as a matter of fact, the bureaucracy has not made the most important decisions in recent years. It has not made decisions on race relations or on the war in Vietnam. The Pentagon didn't make the decision to go to war in Vietnam. These decisions were made by the President of the United States or by the presidents of the United States. If there is real public attention to an issue, and if the President and Congress go one way, the bureaucracy cannot go its own way. Look at the SST issue. The ongoing economic regulation that the national bureaucracy engages in is two-bit stuff. It doesn't determine the quality of the regime. I would therefore disagree with Professor Zoll when he sets himself against an adequate national bureaucracy. For if our nation requires leadership, including administrative leadership, we must strengthen those qualities of the bureaucracy that contribute knowledge and moderation to government and set an example of devotion to the public good. The recommendations by the commission headed by former President Herbert Hoover in 1949 rested on a sober recognition of the major role that the bureaucracy plays in the execution of national policy.
I regret, and I'm sure we all regret, Professor Frisch, that you did not have an opportunity to work out a paper which adequately presented your own position. However, you have performed a most important service to us in sharpening the debate and posing, ideally, those questions we would all like to frame.